It's Deja Vu. Sean McAdam of Boston Sports Journal back with us. Hello there, Sean.
You know, you can't fool me, Rich. I recognize that song in the background as Call on Me, and you like me so much, you've done it twice in the span of 15 minutes.
There you go. Well, you know, that's what we're going to do. That every time we have a guest today, we're going to call you first, thinking that you've probably got something better to share than our original plan.
That's probably not true, but I always enjoy coming on with you guys.
Well, we love talking to you. We were hoping we'd be talking about the World Series, but things turned a little bit. So now that we've had a couple of days to let it all sink in, for Red Sox fans, should it be more what might have been, what we let get away, or wow, what a great ride this was?
I think the arrow points a little bit more to option B there, Rich. You know, we can all go back and ruminate over what happened between, say, games midway through game four and the rest of the series, and how different that was from the beginning of the series when the Red Sox seemed to score at will against Houston, and it looked like certainly they were ticketed for a World Series appearance. I mean, you know, there's some short-term disappointment, I think, because anytime you get that close, anytime you are two wins away from winning a pennant, it's disappointing that that doesn't happen. But to use the old cliche, certainly if you had said to most Red Sox fans on opening day, prior to them going out and being swept by the Baltimore Orioles over the next 3 days, would you sign up for a deep run into October? I think most fans would have done that eagerly, and so I think there's your answer. You know, didn't maximize the potential of October, but it was still, I think, in total, a pretty successful run.
Yeah, and can you imagine how Dodger and Giants fans feel?
Sure, and you know, that's a reminder of how sometimes inexplicable postseason results can be. You know, Billy Beane is famous for talking about the randomness of the postseason, and I think that's true to a degree. There were better teams that went out before the Red Sox did. You know, they kind of got on a nice little run there, starting the postseason, beating the Yankees, and I think surprising most people by upending Tampa Bay, and then taking a lead on Houston and seemingly being in the driver's seat before it went a little sideways.
Well, it's going to be an interesting offseason, I think, because there were obviously some holes in this team, but they've got a pretty strong nucleus coming back. Let's start with the starting pitching. Sale back, Eovaldi back, Pivetta, and Tanner Houck. That's not a bad four to begin with.
Yeah, and I think if you add Garrett Whitlock into that mix as a guy that they obviously want to turn into a starter, that was the role he was in the minor leagues, and they thought it best as a Rule 5 guy, and in fact a Rule 5 guy coming off Tommy John surgery, so they had to be particularly mindful about workload and innings and all that. Plus, he was unproven. He hadn't pitched above AA before making his major league debut in the first few days of the season, and you know, he proved to be a revelation. He was arguably their best pitcher, starter or reliever, all year, with an ERA under 2, a guy that they came to trust, and a guy that came to be their most valuable reliever in the postseason. So, yeah, that's, you know, if you did nothing else and came back with those five as a rotation, with Sale having a full offseason under his belt and then presumably fully recovered from Tommy John next spring, and Eovaldi still under control for a year, and Pivetta, what he showed at times, and then the two younger guys, that's pretty good. And certainly they know that they have to augment that rotation because you need depth and you need other options. And whether that means bringing back Eduardo Rodriguez or whether that means signing or trading for another established starter, I'm sure they will be 7 or 8 deep rather than just 5 deep when we get to spring training.
Now, Eduardo Rodriguez, who pitched, I think you could say, probably a little bit better than his record would indicate this year, he's a guy who's going to make some money somewhere. How seriously will the Red Sox be involved in the bidding for his services?
My guess is, Rich, that their interest in bringing him back will probably begin and end with a qualifying offer.
Mm.
I don't think that they want to get into a long-term commitment with him simply because it's hard to judge where he's going. As you noted, his secondary and tertiary numbers were better than the 4.75 ERA that he put up for the year. If he was the victim of some bad defense and some bad luck. His hard hit rate was down. His rate of contact was down. His strikeouts were up. All those things were good, but you can't ignore that, over 30-plus starts, he allowed nearly five earned runs per nine innings. So I think given that, which you can understand him being a bit inconsistent this year, having missed all the previous year, having gone through COVID and then the resulting side effect of the myocarditis, how did that impact him this year? I'm not sure there's a way to quantify it, but it's hard to say, they need to get him signed for, 4 years and $75 million. But a qualifying offer, even if that would mean overpaying him for 2022, the qualifying offer has been set at $18.4 million. That's clearly an overpay, but it limits their exposure because it's not a long-term deal. And as Theo Epstein was fond of saying, there's no such thing as a bad one-year contract. And maybe, Rodriguez comes back stronger next year, pitches well, and then, you think about an extension after that. For now, this seems like a safe way for the Red Sox to retain him for a year, and it might be a good opportunity for Rodriguez to rebuild his value for a more lucrative, longer deal in the future.
We're talking with Sean McAdam here on Downtown. A lot of work to do in remaking that bullpen, and a big part of that, and I don't know how they'll go about it as a coaching staff, but rebuilding the confidence of your closer, Matt Barnes.
Yeah, I mean, he got signed to a two-year extension back in July, and everyone at the time thought that was a steal, given the market value and what you expect top closers to get. He clearly was willing to take less to stay here. It's the organization that drafted him out of UConn, the only organization he's ever known. And then he just kind of fell apart in the second half to the point where he pitched himself out of the closer role, was left off the division series before being added after the injury to Garrett Richards, was not part of the ALCS roster. It's quite a turnaround, and not in a good way from July to October. But I think, you look at maybe some inconsistencies with his delivery and his approach and the inability to do what he did in the first half, which is throw strikes and get ahead. He did that better than any point in his career, and that's what got him on the American League All-Star team and helped to earn him that extension. It's certainly way too early to give up on Matt Barnes, given his track record. And I think, a fresh start, and maybe some look at video and some corrections with his mechanics gets him back on track by next year.
Kyle Schwarber made such an impact on this team, both on the field and off. The teammates seem to like him a lot. The fans love the way he plays the game and his attitude, but he also seems to be caught in kind of a logjam, especially if J.D. Martinez decides to exercise his option and come back. Is there a spot for Schwarber on this roster?
I think it's difficult to have them both come back. And to a certain extent, the Red Sox are hamstrung because that's a call that Martinez has to make within 5 days of the end of the World Series. So, that's about 2 weeks away. And I think that could go either way. I think Martinez can look at the $19.35 million he's due, on his last year, and think that it'd be tough to top that in this environment, particularly with CBA not done and no official word, though everyone expects it, that the DH will be in the National League last year, which obviously would double the number of interested teams or potential teams for him to bid on or to bid on him. So, you know, that has to happen first. I think if Martinez opts back in and remains, maybe they could make it work for a year. You know, they'd only be committed to Martinez for 2022, and between having him play some outfield, having Schwarber play some first, maybe you could make it work for a year. I think in a perfect world, you choose one or the other. And I think, frankly, the Red Sox might prefer Schwarber at this point. He's younger. He gets on base more. I think he's probably not the pure hitter Martinez is, but he might have more upside power-wise, particularly in that ballpark. So that's going to be a fascinating little dance we're going to watch here over the next couple of months to see, number one, what Martinez does, and then how the Red Sox handle Schwarber. And finally, there's a third alternative. Martinez could opt back in. The Red Sox could then re-sign Schwarber and trade Martinez. There's nothing to stop them from doing that. He probably wouldn't be happy about that, but that's part of the game and the business. So there are all sorts of variables in play.
And what's the future for Bobby Dalbec, who had such a great second half, but then was kind of missing in action in the postseason?
Yeah, and obviously some of that might be tied to Schwarber or a Schwarber-Martinez duo. I think if Martinez either opts out or the Red Sox re-sign Schwarber and trade Martinez, then Schwarber is basically, you know, your everyday DH with the ability to occasionally fill in at first or last, although I don't know that you want to do that too often. Then the path is clear for Dalbec to be pretty much the everyday first baseman. If they somehow both come back, then that gets a little tougher, and you wonder if they don't think about having Dalbec learn how to play left field and help out in that regard, to give him more at-bats and give the roster more flexibility. But a lot of these things are obviously interconnected, and it's hard to know what's going to happen with one guy until you figure out, you know, the one or two before him that links up to his availability.
Sean, I wanted to ask you about, I know a dear friend of yours, a legend in the business here in New England, the great Bob Neumeier, passed away at the age of 70. You worked with him on the baseball show. Such a tremendous talent, and everybody who ever worked with him had nothing but good things to say about him.
Yeah, and, you know, that's rare in this business, Rich, as I know you know, being in it. You get a lot of people, you get some big names and big egos, and people aren't who they seem to be, and people see through that and talk behind their back, and, oh, if you really knew what this guy was all about, you wouldn't think so highly of him. I don't know a single person who didn't like Bob Neumeier. And, you know, ultimately, that's probably the best tribute you could pay him as a person. You know, he was full of enthusiasm. He loved sports. He didn't become jaded. He enjoyed watching and reporting and talking about what he had seen. He was fun to be with. He was funny. He was kind. Just a prince of a guy. And it was so shocking to read that and hear that news Sunday morning. I know he had a very serious medical episode when we were both together at Comcast Sportsnet, probably going back 6-7 years ago. Bob missed a lot of time and had a very serious thing to overcome. And thankfully, he made it back and came back and worked there for a little while longer and looked to be in good health, but apparently there were some heart issues that ultimately became too tough to overcome. And it's a sad day and a sad time for all of the people who knew him. And I would say that, you know, if you didn't know him personally, but you thought the guy that you saw on TV would be a great guy to have a beer with and discuss sports, and seemed every bit as genuine as he came across. And I'm here to tell you that that's exactly who Bob Neumeier was.
Well, our thoughts are with Bob's family and all of you who were friends and worked with him through the years, and appreciate you sharing your thoughts on him, Sean. And as always, appreciate you talking Red Sox with us both times we called you this afternoon, and we'll catch up with you again.
My input was limited the first time, but I was there in spirit.
And that's what we appreciate, Sean. We'll talk with you again before too long. Look forward to talking Red Sox throughout the winter with you.
You got it, Rich. Thanks.
Thank you, Sean. Sean McAdam from Boston Sports Journal. Here on Downtown.